What we want to start off actually talking about today is, because we haven't seen Crystal since Malibu Hamilton passed away, and Malibu had a bit of an influence over the Karioi project and its formation. So what do you have uppermost in your mind?
Yeah, so I mean, Malibu was the convener for Te Whakaoranga o Karioi, so there was...
Which
means the restoration of Karioi. Yeah. But it was a collective put together when lots of people in the community would get very upset when Doc would come and do a 1080 op.
Mm.
And so the initiatives was started with the, you know, purpose of like doing something on Karioi that was practical and involved the community. And so that essentially was what the Karioi project set out to do. And eventually, I think time went by and it was contentious and nothing like real practical was happening, except some of the hapu was, you know, doing possum trapping, and there would have been hunters out there doing some possum work.
And I knew,
you know,
there were,
so it wasn't
there were,
nothing.
Yeah, and there were random people who just like went up and did their own trapping because they wanted to.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, but that didn't really come under Te Whakaoranga o Karioi. And I think by the time I kind of met up with them, because I think this was more around 2007, 2008. Maybe even like before that. And anyway, and then I came back from overseas, and actually it was just outside here, the town hall.
Yeah.
That I remember talking to Malibu. I was involved with the Environment Centre, and I'd already met Malibu and been involved a little bit with the Environment Centre before I went overseas, a few years before that, and I knew Liz and Rick and all those guys. And I just remember him and I chatting outside there on the stairs and him saying, "Why don't you do something, Crystal?" You know, and we were talking about Karioi. And obviously, like, I was working at NIWA at the time. I was a marine and freshwater ecologist. But I had dabbled a little bit in kind of biodiversity restoration at Kakapuka and being part of a translocation of North Island robin.
So that's a little cone over forest. The other side of the divvy, sort of out the other side of Taronga.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, like, yeah. And then I'd also, so I'd done that project with Kim King, who's like, Carolyn King, who's like the mammal expert in New Zealand. Like, she wrote she edited the mammal handbook of New Zealand.
What mammals do we have?
Well, like predators.
Ah, yeah. All right. So, the non-native ones.
Yeah, so she was doing – so a lot of friends of mine had done a master's in that with her around stoat research.
Mm.
So I wasn't completely ignorant, but I had like really purposely chosen to do marine and freshwater ecology because that's the space I wanted to work in and be in.
Yeah.
And that's what I was doing at NIWA. But – like for me, at the same time as like, or just before that conversation with Malibu, I had been driving up and down from Te Uku because I lived out there to Hamilton for work and crossing the divvy. And then obviously every night coming back and I'd look at Karioi and go, there's no community project on that mountain.
Mm.
And it was kind of like that thought in my head. And then Malibu's words kind of collided when he was like, "Why don't you do something?"
Yeah.
And it was very much his inspiration around, you know, because I was probably like, "Oh, well, what should we do?" And, you know, obviously got a bit of the background, would meet for coffees and chat about it. I kept promising that I'd do something. But what does doing something look like? So in the end, what happened was that I had promised to write like a little management plan around what we could do, and I don't mean for the whole mountain, but Malibu just said, "Why don't you just focus on Upper Wainui Reserve? It has easy access, like we can get people, the neighbours involved." He lived up there.
So
he kind of sparked those first ideas, and then he also said, "I'll get Sandy Hunuku to come along." And Sandy was living on the mountain, like, you know, on the hapu block right next door. And he was already trapping possums and doing in that space. And so Malibu pulled that together. And my bit was is that I was quite connected, like, with various people, young people that were, like, ecologists or, you know, young ecologists working in that space, especially through Jerry Kessel. So I spent time with Jerry. He was a consultant out at Te Pahu. And so he had a lot of young ecologists working for him. And so I connected with them. I went to Doc and said, hey, can we do this project? And that Doc kind of said, well, this is the obstacle. This is what you can do. This is what you can't do. You can't use toxins. You can't do this, can't do that. But you can use traps. I was like, fine, we'll use traps. Mm. And so I kind of just, I guess, got in their face and like sat at their desk and okay, show me what I need to do if I want to start this project, you know. And then there's no way, I just remember distinctly not wanting to go about doing it by myself. And so first it was
the mountain, yeah.
Yeah, with the whole mountain. Yeah. But also, you know, even starting anything, like, you know, the thought of starting anything by yourself would like just make me go, oh, no, no way.
That's very
but
wise.
But because
yeah.
Malibu was there kind of encouraging and championing and he kept kind of prodding me and had already those first steps, kind of that vision for the first steps, all I kind of really had to do was put wheels on it. And so I asked a couple of the girls like Britta and that, and actually Maharu, and like there was a whole bunch of them that were there, and said, hey, if we do this thing, will you come and help out? And they were like, yes, of course. And so I know that sounds really simple, but it was such a big deal at the time because suddenly we had a group of about 10 to 15 of us, like a few people in the community that we'd networked with. Maybe, I can't remember if we put out a bit of a notice. I think they had like a supporters list from Te Whakaoranga Karioi of people that had signed up. So we sent that out and just said, hey, come along. And then we had this first meeting to start it, and it was actually in Mike Goodison's house. And we sat around the table. I think there was about 12 people, and Sandy opened with a karakia, and that was the start of it. It was amazing.
But you had no money at that point?
We had no money, but there was this little fund that Doc had called the Community Conservation Fund, Waikato Community Conservation Fund, and you could apply for up to $5,000. And we got about $4,800 or whatever. And so we bought our first traps. And just all the bits and pieces that we needed to get going. Oh, and then the other big thing was that I had written this little management plan saying, hey, this is what we want to do in Upper Wainui. This is what that would look like. And someone had taken that and thrown it on Ollie Gansel's desk. And Ollie's a local doc guy here that lives in this community. And he hit me up and said, well, tell me what you want to do. I'll give you some support. And so he gave us all the technical support and showed us how to set the traps and like what to buy and how to build the tunnels, because we used to build the rat trap tunnels out of Corflu.
Yeah.
And we like hit up like regional council for like bits and pieces and local real estate, donated real estate signs to, you know, cool flute signs. So it was just like this real like little collective of us. And then we had a bunch of people from Hamilton that I was connected in with, like from through Arosha, the trust I'd set up. And so they came and helped build tunnels.
So you set up the local, this part of the country, Arosha Trust?
For the whole country.
Whole country.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
So it was just this collection of like just a whole bunch of us of like just passionate people that just willing to do something, like be really practical. And I don't mean to sound negative, but we really try to tap into the people that wanted to do something, not talk about it.
Yeah, this is a thing.
You know?
You're not the only person who said that thing. Yeah,
and that's not – there's a place for everything, like activism and protest and all that's really important, right? But for this particular bit of work, you needed people that really just wanted to get out in the bush and do the stuff. And that's exactly what we did. And actually all we said was that we would put out the traps. I think we had about 60 traps. And we'd all get together, like, and deployed them all, and Ollie helped us set the lines, and, you know, so we kind of met on Saturday mornings or afternoons or something, or maybe it was Sundays, actually. We went out for walks with some of the kids that we had, like Helen Ritchie's kids. They're all grown up now. Like, they were some of the first ones that came out and joined us and just made it fun for everyone. So we tried to – so some of the values that we had was around, like, really early on, like, you know – Malibu was very strong on like, you know, it's got to be a community project. We've got to get the community involved. So we have ownership over it, you know. And then it was very much also partnership approach, because We were all from different entities and kind of groups and had different affiliations, but we were all coming together. So there was a strong partnership approach, a strong focus on working with mana whenua. So Sandy and his whānau, like, you know, getting involved and doing their bit. And then also a big thing that Malibu said is that we wanted to create local employment. And so his vision was to kind of have four ranges on the mountain. Yeah. You know, just yeah. And
how many you got now?
Four.
There we go.
Yeah.
Tick.
Yeah. So it's really yeah, like it was really visionary of him.
Yeah, he had such a clear picture of what needed to happen.
Yeah.
All the time and whatever the issue was, and he was involved. I think John counted up 18 so far. I don't know if he's found any more major kind of organizations or issues that he got involved in in his time here. So
You know, often joke now is like, hey, we just started this little project and we were just wanting to trap some rats. And so we weren't thinking, like, it was just that next step. What are we going to do next? It wasn't like we're going to start this big thing. It was like, let's just start on this 10 hectares. We chucked in 60 rat traps. In the first week, we caught 80 rats. And we did all the monitoring. We got a student from the University of Waikato.
Because there were so many.
Yeah. So, like, someone went and checked. I remember feeling really disappointed because it was Hugh Oliver. He lived just down the road. He's a very old man now.
Yeah.
I think he's mostly in Hamilton now. But he would come and, like, show us his carvings. And he was, like, an entomologist. And he'd talk about the bugs. And he loved the audience and sharing the information. So it was just all these people coming together that were really excited about doing stuff but also sharing what they knew. And then we'd go and check the trap. And I remember he went and checked the traps, like, before we got a chance to do it the next Sunday. And I was, like, remember thinking, oh, my gosh, he checked the first traps. Like, and he'd already reset them again. That's why we caught, like, 80 out of, like, probably 60 traps in that first week.
Oh, because they've been two goes at it.
Yeah. And then we did all the monitoring, and it really showed that decline in numbers. And, you know, like, and then we were like, oh, we'll just do it for spring. And then at the end of spring, everyone was like, we were like, should we stop now? And everyone was like, no, we'll keep going. And we've never stopped. Mm. It was really interesting too because, you know, some would argue like, well, what difference do you make in that small segment of bush, right? But it was all about getting people involved and just starting somewhere.
And then learning.
Yeah, and then another really, really important conversation I had was that I went and saw a guy in Hamilton who was at Landcare Research, John Innes, and he was an expert on rat ecology. And I went to him and I said, you know, if we do this thing, like, is it worth it? And he said, every rat you catch is worth it. And it's just those little conversations that just drop pennies, you know, for us. It's like, ah, yep, okay, this is worth doing. It's really funny because years later I talked to him about that and he said, yeah, I don't know if I believe that anymore. And I was like, don't you change your mind. Yeah, anyway.
Sometimes I think that's the wrong question. Like, if you're feeling driven to do it, you should be doing it.
Mm.
That's because we should be doing what we should be doing with our lives, what we feel driven to do,
yeah.
Not what we should do or what our mother told us to do for our career or, you know, that sort of stuff. Like, yeah, if there's a passion and a drive and there's a community around it, that means it should be happening.
Yeah. And every time we expanded, like, then we found out about the seabirds and Malibu was like, well, you know, then we should. I was like, should we go into the next reserve? And he's like, yes, we should do that. And then we crossed the mountain and then we got some money and, you know, we got Sandy's trust to kind of set more lines and cut lines, and we were able to pay them.
Yeah.
So that's just kind of how things grew. And Malibu, often we'd kind of come back together and meet, and I'd be kind of like, what's next? You know, what should we do? And like, we'd come up with these ideas and the next steps, and just slowly inching towards, you know, a better solution to what we could do on the mountain. Yeah.
He's clearly one of those people who's able to not, I don't mean it quite like this, but speak things into being.
Mm.
You know, like his, I mean, Whaiva Rickard had that effect too.
Mm.
She would, in fact, more. It was more obvious with her. She'd just tell people, and they had to do it. Apparently, that's why.
Yeah,
like Katerina Matilda would say, put it that way.
Yeah,
once she told you to do something, you pretty much just had to go and do it.
Yeah,
Malibu would cajole you into it.
Yeah, he was like kind of. I kind of think of him like just as a real champion, you know, of causes and people.
Mm-hmm.
And he had this really gentle way around, like, you know, not put. You know, he could go hard on the issues, you know, but not on the people so much. I'm sure he got hard on the people sometimes too. But his philosophy was to maintain relationship, I think, and well, that's definitely my experience. And always encouraging, always up for a chat, and just wanting the best. And yeah, he had some really strong ideas about that. Like, and it was interesting because, well, John Lawson was a big part of a lot of these conversations too.
Yeah.
And actually, among the three of us, we probably all had a slightly different variation on our ideas about 1080. We weren't all anti-1080, let's put it that way.
I'm aware of that, yeah.
And so there was that kind of, but there was a collaboration and like, hey, if we want to do something different, we have to start somewhere. We're not going to get it perfect. And I know that Malibu probably got some pushback on that. It's kind of like he'd sold out on the vision of anti-1080 or something. But I know he really pushed back on people, and then we had some really big discussions about, hey, if we're going to start, if we want to get here, then we have to start, you know, in that first step and then make our way across towards that ultimate vision.
Yeah.
You know, so, yeah. So, and that, you know, I think that was hard sometimes, but I think what kind of really helped is that we maintained the relationship and the friendship. And so we kept being able to talk and influence each other. And we were able to change our minds, you know. If we did something wrong, we could try again, different way.
Yeah, he was very good at relationships. Like I worked on GE-free issues with him in the, I don't know, 2006-07, sometime around there.
Mm.
And he ended up somehow, despite being an obvious opponent to what was happening at Ruakura Ag Research, or is it, anyway, we all know there's something going on over there.
Mm.
He talked his way into inspecting what they were doing.
Mm.
Yeah, somehow, despite them knowing that he was directly opposed to what they were doing.
Yeah,
he still got in there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, because knowledge is powerful, isn't it? Like, it's, you have to actually really get in and see all the detail and hear all the different perspectives. And I think he was good at that, is like meeting with people who had very different ideas. And it's very easy for us to just surround ourselves with people that only have the same thinking as us, but the most valuable is that maybe that was the powerful kind of combination of people with different perspectives coming together and still finding solutions together.
I think you need to find good solutions. You need diversity.
Yeah,
And you need to challenge each other.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
Because you can have an idea in your head and it looks perfect.
Yeah.
But you put it out on the table and you've got to expose it to the light and see what you get and refine it.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I always think all my amazing ideas, you know, bring them to the team and then they tell me that they're not perfect.
Yeah, well, you've got a bunch of people now paid to tell you.
Yeah, yeah. But anyway,
Crystal's got a new idea.
Yeah, because, oh no. Yeah, although Louis is the ideas man on the team.
I can see that.
But, big loss, really sad. Actually, I was looking at emails from Malibu. And we did actually, ironically, like kind of, we did a acknowledgement of Malibu and the work he'd done actually when Raglan actually did a volunteer acknowledgement kind of gathering, like a...
Oh, yes. Last year or something, was it?
No, was it
earlier
this year.
Quite a while ago, though.
June or something.
Oh, was it?
Yeah. I said to Gabe, I said, like, oh, I'd like to do one for Malibu. And, you know, kind of just write something now while he's still with us, but he's left the community.
Yeah.
No, of course not, knowing that he was going to pass so soon after. So I actually wrote it and sent it to him and had a big chat to him just about life, and he told me lots about his life and what he'd been doing and working, just life, you know, work life, not so much like the charitable stuff that he's been doing. And it was this really nice conversation, and then he was okay with me writing that acknowledgement, because he was always very, careful about what went out and didn't want spotlight and didn't want, you know, to, to kind of, it's like he didn't even want the acknowledgement, really. You know, he just was happy to just to work out in the background and not kind of get too much of the kudos. And so I was a bit careful about what I wrote, but, you know, passerby him, he said that was fine. And then one of the last emails he sent us, he was saying, like, how proud he was of what everything that had been done.
Mm.
Yeah.
I guess as you get nearer the end of your life, you worry less about that, not wanting to be in the spotlight.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, there's a lot of people get Queen's Awards or King's Awards or service medals or things like that.
Mm.
And he was always the slightly on the fringes radical guy who was never going to get one of those, but clearly deserved actually that kind of, if other people deserved it, he certainly deserved recognition like that. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he was a hardcore activist, but he always said he learned to work from the inside. So, yeah.
The thing is with the word activist is so coloured in our culture now.
Yeah.
And it tends to be coloured in the view that they're ignorant people just reacting against the world.
Mm.
But he was extremely well informed.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you usually find that with those successful activists, they are all extremely well informed.
Mm.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. Yes, amazing, and yeah, a sad loss, and we'll definitely always remember him for,
Where do we find the likes of him again?
Hmm.
Yeah, look out there.
There are still some amazing people, obviously, that are out there, but he did have he was able to spread himself so wide, to support so many things. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, well, look, let's segue into where things are currently at with the Karioi project, and this, you know, it's part of his legacy. He's not the only person, but it's definitely part of his legacy.
Mm.
So how are the chicks doing at the moment, the Oi chicks?
Yeah,
it's usually at this time of the year that there's always a bit of bad news.
Yeah, we've already had one stowed incursion.
Yeah.
But it didn't get a lot of burrows. Oh, am I eating the...
You're getting sideways onto the microphone.
Oh, sideways onto the microphone.
Yeah, a little too sideways, yeah.
So we've got, probably got about 15, maybe 15 odd chicks and burrows still.
Yeah.
And then we've got the little penguins as well. We've got little chicks there as well.
You had quite a few of those this year.
Yeah, I think we've got about 6 or 7 burrows still active. It's exciting. We just see them drop off as the year progresses. That is just how it is.
Yeah.
And sometimes that's really, really confronting because we'll have it on camera where we literally see chicks getting dragged out of burrows by a stoke.
Oh, God.
Yeah, which is horrible.
It's like a horror movie.
Yeah. And we have burrow buddies who do that work and they're looking at that stuff on a weekly or, fortnightly basis. So it's hard. It's hard stuff sometimes.
Do they feel like they want to go and camp out there and, like, go guard the burrow?
Yeah. And, we've seen the little penguins coming in. So, it's just a really vulnerable time because the parents are coming back and forth, so they're vulnerable too.
How much longer till they...
Till December.
Till December, okay. So there's still a way to go.
Yeah, we've still got quite a way to go. And, so we just got to hang in there. We're doing all the work, doing lots of trapping and working with landowners if they want to get trapping. You know, every little bit counts, like we learned right from the start.
Yeah.
And we're also just really, really asking people to have dogs on leads just as they go down.
Is that message getting through?
No, not always. It was interesting because I actually had a look down there and there's actually a Waikato District Council sign at the bottom of Bryant Track. You know, it says, or at the beach, like it says, if you go right, dogs off lead. If you go left, dogs on lead.
Mm.
And I hadn't noticed that for ages. And I was like, oh my gosh, I actually have the sign up. So if you're going to the south end of the beach, just have your dog on a lead or just don't go there. Mm. And if you go the other way towards the harbour... you can have it off the lead and it's quite safe. But especially at dawn and dusk, those birds are coming in and out. And we've got burrows right on the beach. We've got them just behind some of the pampas grass. We've got them off the track on Bryant Reserve, just down the track. So really, really accessible. And especially little dogs can get into the burrows.
Yeah, which is what they're designed to do.
Yeah, but also big dogs will either can get the birds, you know, if the birds are coming in, can get the penguins, and they also dig out the burrows sometimes because
yeah.
they're really strong smelling. And, yeah, I did get a message the other day where someone said, oh, there's people walking, you know, their dog loose, and you know, it's not under control.
Were they expecting you to race down to the beach or?
No, but they said, oh, apparently you said it was okay. And I was like, oh.
That's the grapevine for you, isn't it?
Yeah, I was like, yeah, I'm pretty sure I didn't say that.
So you would have said it was okay to, when you turn right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, we're really just asking people to do that because there's one thing, it's good for the birds, and it's good training for your dog to have it on the lead and under control, including my own dog. Mm. And also, yeah, like it's upsetting for people that care about this stuff and are involved, and then they see people breaking those very simple rules.
Yeah, you're working
rules.
So hard. Yeah, it'd drive you around the bend, actually, that would.
Yeah. And also just generally having your dog under control, like, we have had some issues with people having their dogs roaming. And so knowing your dog's on your property and either tied up or stays and loyal, you know, and doesn't leave the property is really important because roaming dogs are incredibly dangerous, not only for people but also for wildlife.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we're really trying to ram that home and say, please, 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 you know, watch out. Because dogs love chasing birds and anything that goes, you know.
They're built to chase small, fluffy things. Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah. So that's definitely a big one for us, and we do need to keep reminding people about that.
Mm. Yeah, I wonder about that sign. Council signs, they all have standard fonts and things, and I think, and standard design, and I think we kind of filter them out.
Oh, yeah. We just stop seeing
it. It should be a sign done by an artist that's like, quite visceral, maybe.
Mm.
Yeah. Maybe not too visceral.
Yeah. Yeah.
But something that already you go, oh, okay.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think we should get a bit more signage out there and, like, get people – I think people really need to realise that we have that wild – you know, like, if we – if you see orca coming into the harbour, like, you become really aware and you know what rules apply. So you're not going to take your speedboat and race past them.
Yeah, and people are self-policing too. If someone's dumb enough to do that, they quickly get told.
Yeah. Yeah, or with seals. We're getting that more too, where people are like, hey, there's a seal on the rocks, and we're aware that it needs to be taken care of, or we check that it's okay, you know, and there's that checking in. And I think with the smaller the animal, the less people care or something. I don't know. But like with the penguins, I think most people don't know they're there yet and they don't see them as much. So that's hard.
I'm trying to think if I would know if I hadn't had these regular interviews with you.
Yeah, well, that's right. So I think there's a job we have to do. But you all, yeah, I think there is a bit of caution because you can get a bit of backlash. And so how far do you stick your neck out? So we really like trying to appealing to people's good nature to protect something that they ultimately often don't get to see.
Mm.
You know, like when you see the orca, like there's that wow factor and you see them and they're in the harbour. But these birds, unfortunately, are a little in burrows, and sometimes like surfers will see out the little penguins out surfing.
Yeah.
And they bob up, you know, in the water and stick their head out and, you know, dive down again. So that's pretty cool. And fishermen like are more aware of the seabirds out there, and they like, you know, because they see them like feeding out at sea. But I think that, you know, the burrows and the chicks have the ultimate cute factor, but we don't get to see them. So I think part of us is that, you know, the hardest thing is that we're trying to create awareness around something that people don't see.
Yeah, it needs to be, and it is a community value to look after that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
Maybe for people who are really just vaguely aware that something's happening on the mountain, they don't, you know, there's a trapping project and we're helping the birds, they don't realise that the focus is is particularly on the coast,
because
that's where the unique life is for our area.
Yeah. But we're also doing more bat surveys and we're finding more spots for bats. And
those are things we definitely don't see.
Yeah. And then also this weekend we're doing the Matuku Hiripo surveys again. Yeah, Friday, Saturday, Sunday night. So anyone that wants to go and hang around for an hour or so around the wetland and listen out to the boom of the Matuku.
So which wetland?
Any wetland.
Any wetland, yeah, even so Aroaro.
Yeah, you can go and sit.
Here in town by the river club.
I mean, it's very likely that you might not hear it, but we actually do have sites around town where you do hear them, which is really exciting because they're a really endangered bird as well.
So you go, you listen, and then you record on a website somewhere.
Yeah, there's an app that you can sign up to or you can just let us know.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's not just the oi, it's not just a penguin. We've also got some really cool stuff that's literally in people's backyards.
Hmm.
So that's exciting.
Yeah, okay. So that's happening at the moment. What about your education projects?
Yep.
I know you had every weekday of the school holidays, you had a holiday program this holiday.
Yeah, we've been really busy. And then we've got Karyo Kids starting next week, so that's fully booked.
Yeah.
And we've got Karyo Rangers the next week after starting.
What days are they?
Tuesday and Wednesdays.
Yeah, there's so many kids things these days.
Yeah.
So many.
So, Wednesday's still open for Rangers, which is our older age group, from 10 to 12 years old. And then we're also doing a bit of a stint with Te Uku School this term.
Yeah.
So we're getting some of their year 7 and 8s are coming out and doing a day as a ranger out on Karioi, so that'll be fun.
Yeah, they're going to see some traps.
Yeah.
Some full traps.
Yep, hopefully.
Yeah, it's the real deal. No sheltering them for what's really happening.
Yeah.
Although a lot of the kids out there live on farms anyway, so they're well aware of what happens with animals at the end of their lives and things like that.
So we've done that with the Raglan Area School, so we had some funding so we could do it with Te Uku School as well. So that's exciting.
Oh, yeah, cool.
Yeah.
Tomato School might be listening going, oh.
Yeah.
Well, actually, no, they shouldn't be listening. They should be at work. But
yeah, they'll have to hit us up.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. All right. Have you got anything else you want to let people know about?
No, I think that's it. I might remember something after this. Oh, yes, we've got our bait deploy next week. So our last bait op for the year. So it's on.
And what sort of bait is this, Crystal? Now we've been talking about 1080.
Like, yeah, it's not 1080.
It's not 1080.
So we're using, what are we using? D block, which is difasinone. And that's kind of like a long life bait that has a waxy coat. So we leave it over summer. So that's in our eastern block on Karioi, kind of quite well away from town, really.
So how do you deploy that bait? Do you just go up the tracks you've cut and throw them into the bush?
Yeah, we've got hundreds of kilometres of tracks and we get a whole bunch of volunteers on Tuesday and Thursday and then they get, shown exactly what to do. And a lot of them have done it lots before. And all the bait gets bagged up into small bags of about 0.5 kilo.
Yeah.
And then it just goes into bait stations. So it's well contained. And then the animals just go in and nibble away at it.
Okay.
Yeah, and controls them. So actually we did our monitoring and all our some of our rat monitoring came out at nearly 0%, which was amazing. But we know it's not quite zero. But, all the tracking tunnels were coming up clear, which is awesome. And our possum numbers are really low as well, close to 5%. So it's amazing.
So that's over what area?
About 700 hectares.
And how much is the forested area of the Maunga?
It's about 1,500.
So kind of half the...
Yeah.
Okay, that's awesome. Yeah.
Yeah, it's amazing. So, we're getting really good results with that. And you'll still get little pockets of stuff, around. It's definitely not an exact science monitoring, but it gives us a really good indication of what we have achieved. So that's pretty exciting.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah. So if you want to volunteer next week, it's a really cool day up tracks and amazing views and out of the mountain that most people don't get to see. So if you want to sign up, just contact us through our website, Karyo Project, or Facebook or whatever.
Okay, Crystal. Yeah, cool. Thanks for coming in this
morning. Thanks, Aaron.